And playing the role of Paul Prideger today is...
Wireless Mike, hey. A non-attorney spokesperson.
I'm so glad you're here. You know, this makes us the stereo mics.
Yes, yes. That's great.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's a gorgeous day in Oshkosh again. It's 77 today. Humidity's down to 50%, and we have a whopping 1 mile an hour wind, so all those departures are getting everything they need.
It's down the runway? That's a huge crosswind there.
And I'm lousy, and that's kind of within my limits. I'm lousy at that. So our first quarter hour on Squawk 1200 is speaking with a member of the International Federal Partnership in the Federal Pavilion, just a little bit north of us. And today we're talking with a representative of Bird Strike USA. Welcome to Squawk 1200, Chris Pollack.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Bird Strike USA has an exhibit with a combination of hardware and former living things.
Yep.
And so tell me what the message is that you're getting out and the kinds of things that you're talking to folks about today.
Yeah, so the mission of Bird Strike Committee USA is we're dedicated to providing leadership in managing wildlife hazards to aviation. So what we really want to try and do is if you are unfortunate enough to experience a bird strike, we want you to report it and let us know that it happened.
So if I am flying around and I hit a bird, where do I report it to?
The easiest way, fastest way is on the internet. You can go on, if you just Google wildlife strike, it's most likely the first thing that pops up. And it's a form that takes maybe 2-3 minutes at the most to fill out. And we really appreciate all the information that you can provide.
What kind of information are you collecting on the form?
It's not a required form or anything like that. So whatever information that you want to contribute is useful. But we do ask for stuff like time of day, date, time, what the weather was like, tail number, bird species, if you know it. The Smithsonian Institution actually is will identify the species for us. If you don't know what it is, you can send it. There's instructions on the website on how you can send in feathers or any other remains, and the Smithsonian will identify it for us and backfill the report for us.
So if somebody sends in a feather, will you report back to them that this is what hit you?
Yeah, it all comes back through the form. So you, as the person that fills out the form, you get a copy. It emails it back to you as well, and then any modifications to that form that occur, you then get re-notified of it. So when you send it in a couple days later, you get a response back.
Do you have a sense of how often people might encounter a bird strike and then not go through this process?
It's a non-regulatory reporting system.
Entirely optional, right?
Entirely optional. But we are thinking that about 60% of bird strikes are currently reported. So there's about a 40% gap that we're missing. The hard part about it is some people don't even know that they strike a bird or any other type of wildlife.
So what are you using this information for after it's gathered?
The quickest answer to that one is the airports use it to help manage what type of species that they're seeing on the airport. If your airport is seeing lots of strikes in Canadian geese, they'll focus their efforts on mitigating Canada geese, and they won't waste any time working on flamingos. You know, they're just not seeing them.
What about the pink kind? No, they probably don't fly up and hit you.
No,
the pink ones.
No,
like the ones on my lawn.
The lawn ornaments.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they tend to.
No plastic flamingo strikes yet.
Well, I want to go back to just something you said just a minute ago, and that is people may not even know that they've hit a bird. How can that be?
Some of the birds are small. Some of the birds are tiny. Some of the birds get ingested into jet engines, and you just don't even know that it happens. And sometimes a bird will get caught up in wingtip vortices and end up being smashed on the runway. So you might not even strike the bird, but the pilot behind you might say, hey, there's some debris, there's some FOD on the runway, we need to go take care of that. And they might get delayed because there's FOD out there.
Yeah, and speaking from personal experience, sometimes you'll see a thing go by and you go, oh, it looks like a bird went by. I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. And then after landing, you go check the airplane and sometimes you find stuff, sometimes you don't.
That stuff that you find we call snarge.
Snarge.
Why?
That's just the name that finally came up with. So snarge.
Is that an invented word, or does it does it have a?
It's a pretty common industry term that is
okay.
Trying to get the word out. That's what it's actually called.
Okay, it's not like FOD, which is an acronym.
Nope, not an acronym.
Snarge.
We have a poster about it at our booth.
Now, I know that people have hit things other than birds.
Correct.
Other animals.
Yep.
Does snarge apply to all remains or just bird remains?
Yeah, snarge is a pretty general term of just kind of whatever's out there. But yeah, you're absolutely right. 97% of the strikes in the database are birds, and the remaining 3% are other. So that could be terrestrial mammals, that could be reptiles, amphibians, that sort of thing. There's been a couple fish even on the database.
How do you hit a fish?
Most of the time.
With a seaplane. No, really. That's not a joke. That's got to be the right answer.
One of the things that happens on the land-based airports, at least, is birds of prey will be hunting, and they'll have a fish in their talons, and then they get startled by an aircraft, and they'll drop the fish. The bird gets out of the way, but the fish, you know, is kind of stuck. So, and then fish aircraft meet.
So I'm the pilot who thinks I've just hit a fish, and I'm on... And I live in, Nebraska, and I'm on the phone. Honey, really? I did. I hit a fish today. I can't imagine.
Take pictures.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. You need pictures. It's not just the form, right? You want to see pictures.
We would love to have pictures. The database doesn't currently accept pictures. That's something that hopefully will change in the very near future. But the database doesn't collect pictures. However, if you go to the birdstrikeusa.org website that... the committee runs, you can submit pictures there actually for photo contests, and we can see them that way.
Snap a snarge.
Mm-hmm.
So the long term
that needs to be the name of your photo contest. Snap a snarge.
I'm going to take that one back for sure.
Good.
The long term benefit for pilots for filling this out is that you guys can do more research, figure out what birds are in the area, and then use that information to prevent those birds from flying around the airport, which should save people from running into birds, because it can cause a lot of damage to airplanes.
Yeah, it definitely can. And then another thing that the strike data does is it becomes a research location for anybody that's looking into different types of technology out there, different types of methods, different types of actions to prevent bird strikes in the first place. So, you know, ideally, we become a self-replacing group.
We're talking with Chris Pollack, who is a member of Bird Strike USA, a coalition of organizations and individuals interested in collecting data that will help mitigate wildlife and bird problems on airports. Kind of run down the list. You work in airport operations in the state of Ohio.
Yep.
Run down a list of some of the either more common or more interesting bird mitigation approaches that you know of.
Bird mitigation, the best thing to do is habitat management. That's also the most expensive thing. Anytime that we have a pretty extensive grass height management plan, we try really hard to keep our grass heights on the airfield between 6 to 12 inches, trying to eliminate all standing water on the airfield, try and get rid of all that. That attracts a lot of the birds that we don't want to see on the airfield. If we can't get rid of the habitat, what we'll do is we'll try and exclude it. We'll build fences around it. We'll build riprap rock around the edges of the ponds to prevent the geese from coming in and out. And makes it less desirable for them to be there. After that, we then move into harassments. So we can go out, we shoot pyrotechnics off. We have propane cannons, truck horns, all that sort of thing. And that uses a pretty good way of dispersing birds. And some airports actually run a trap and relocate program. So they'll trap some raptors. They'll band them, and then they'll relocate them up to 100 miles away and hope that they don't come back.
Yeah. Do they often come back or not so much?
If there's a prime time of being able to capture them, usually if they're juvenile, we can get them away and they won't come back. If they've kind of established themselves in the area, they tend to return.
As more development encroaches on natural habitat and kind of decreases the area where wildlife habitat exists, do you see that as kind of driving up the level of the problem?
Maybe not, mostly because airports were always kind of a wildlife zone in the first place. At the big cities, they're the oasis. They're the only patch of green that the wildlife is going to see in miles, and they're usually located on the edge of cities in the first place.
So it's not getting any worse because the airport's not getting any smaller, with some exceptions, I guess.
Right. So overall, there has been an increase in strike reporting. Hopefully that's all correlated to just an increase in awareness, an increase in the fact that the strikes are being reported. We have seen a slight decrease over the last couple of years in damaging strikes, which is good, which means we're getting more information, but the tactics and stuff that we're using is being helpful.
So obviously, bigger birds are a bigger concern to airplanes because they do more damage. Do you spend more of your time working on those?
Again, that's the big, easy way to do it. Again, we use that strike data that we're talking about. And depending on the time of year, during the springtime, we're pretty aggressive in trying to harass and get rid of Canada geese. But during the fall, the upcoming migratory season here, European starlings is a pretty common bird nationwide, and they're the little tiny birds. They're smaller than the palm of your hand, but they flock in the thousands. And so a couple gram bird, but multiplied by several thousand flock, and they're the ones that look like a giant school of fish flying in the sky. But you see those, and you're flying an airplane through one of those, it's got bad news on it.
I have a friend who flew through a flock of those on landing, and the number of strikes was, I don't know if it was around 100.
Yeah.
It was significant.
In what aircraft?
That was in a CRJ 200. So
oh my goodness.
No individual one, would have brought the airplane down, but maybe all of them could have done damage to the engines.
Right.
So they were on landing. They landed safely, but the plane was down for inspection for a while.
What's the highest altitude that you have heard of a bird strike happening?
They are most commonly strikes occur below 3,500 feet, but there have been strikes above that. I've heard 25,000 feet, especially when in migratory season, some of the birds get way up there and they're traveling long distances. But 3,500 feet and below, that's the over 90% of the strikes are happening down there.
Okay, so your odds go down above 3,500 feet, but there's no safe place.
There's no safe spot.
Wow, that's surprising.
Do you know what the highest recorded ever one was?
I don't know that one.
Nope. Okay, that'd be an interesting.
I can't imagine a bird. I mean, how efficient must a bird's system must be to be able to fly effectively at 20,000 feet?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to use oxygen up there, so I don't know what he's doing.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a heavy can for him to carry around.
The masks don't fit over those beaks all that well. Not talking about your nose. I'm talking about theirs. Ba-dum-bum.
So, now, unfortunately, we're kind of winding down the week here, are you located here on the field?
Yeah, we're in the International Federal Pavilion, just kind of right across the street here from the radio station.
And is there a website for BirdStrike USA?
Yeah, birdstrikeusa.org.
And that's where they'll find the form if you do have one.
Yeah, there's links to the form. There's links to all other sorts of helpful information. There's a couple pictures out there and just kind of tells you. And all sorts of different resources that are available out there.
I got one other question that I should have asked you earlier. If I'm not an owner but a renter, whose responsibility would you like to have it be to put the report in? The one flying the plane or the one owning the plane?
We will be happy to accept any report. Even if you're a casual observer, if you're watching the air show and you see a strike and you wanted to put it in, all the strikes get vetted and compared. And if there's multiple strike reports that come in, there's a team in Sandusky, Ohio that actually take a look at all the reports. And they'll correlate them all together, and then they'll make one giant report out of it.
And how many reports do you get a day?
The stat is, I think in 2016, there was just over 12,000 strike reports were submitted last year.
So that's somebody's several working really day. Hard looking through all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's dozens a day. I can't do math on the air, but that's a
lot. Yes,
yeah,
for sure.
Wow. Well, so that's a good thing. Yeah. I mean, is the number kind of growing over time?
Yeah, we're thinking that it's an increase in awareness and people actually filling out the strikes. There's been a slight change in some of the wording on what constitutes a strike for some different levels of the organization from airports perspective. So that's changed it a little bit, but yeah, there seems to be an increased awareness and more and more people.
And that's all good for you.
Yep, very good for us.
Chris Pollock, a representative of BirdStrike USA, talking about what happens when you hit a bird. Hey, just a quick word about our social media presence. It's mentioned from time to time here. We are on Facebook, so there's an organization page for us, EAA Radio. We would love to have you tweet use our handle at EAA Radio. And you can also text us to interact with the hosts and guests that are on the air live at 920-550-1210. We'll get that text in here, and we can forward your question on to whoever's with us. You're listening to EAA Radio.